14th of the month of June in the year 2000, and Irv is asleep. Not asleep, okay. And we are continuing right now with the Mishnah that we have towards the bottom of Rosh Hashanah, Chav Gimel, Omid Beis. Okay? We described, first of all, the kind of questions that are being asked of the witnesses. Right. That's what the Mishnah is dealing with, okay? Mm-hmm. And first they asked them, well, the Mishnah first stressed the fact that the witnesses have to be interrogated separately to find out whether their testimony agrees. And then the Mishnah continues, and it says that they want to know, how did the moon seem to you? How did you see it? And was it in front of the sun, or was it behind the sun? Was it Litzfon or Lodoma? Was it to the north, or was it to the south? The next question is, Kama Hoya Gavoa? How high was it in the sky when you saw it? Ula Ayin Hoya Nota? And tell me, in what particular direction was the moon turned? V'chama Hoya Rochav? And how wide was the moon that you noticed? So, Im Omar, if the witness said, Lifnei HaChama, that in other words, that the moon was in front of the sun, diagram, right? Okay, then in that particular case, we say that his testimony means absolutely nothing, because of the fact that such a situation normally cannot arise. So therefore we know that he did not see what he claims that he has seen. Okay. The Achrei Chein, and of course, obviously, if he gave the right answers, so this is what the first witness was. The Achrei Chein, and then afterwards, after they had interrogated the first one, obviously, they took him out of the room, and then they would bring in the second one of the pair of witnesses, both Kinoso, and then they would ask him again these various questions. If their words were alike, in other words, if their testimony was the same, then Edusan Kayemis, then we say that their witnessing is correct, right, truthful, that we want to say, okay? Of course, Kayemis means that, you know, it has substance to it. It stands on its own 2 feet. Ushaor Kalazugos, now don't forget, there's more than one pair, but we only need how many pairs of witnesses in order to testify one pair if they gave the right answers. So what are you going to do with all the others who came to Yerushalayim? So it says, Ushur Kalazugos, and therefore the remaining pairs, Sharon the son, Rashi Parakim, they would ask them some little like general questions, or they would ask them only on the main points. In other words, they didn't go into every detail that we had over there, but let's say maybe they would ask them, was it in front or behind the moon, was it to the north or to the south, and they would give them, but they didn't go through the third degree with them. Lo shayut zrichim lahem, not that they needed the testimony of the other pairs of witnesses, elo kidei shalaytzu b'fachi nefesh, but in order to prevent them from going out in disappointment, Mishvil Shehura Gidum Lavo, because they wanted the witnesses to be accustomed to come and to testify. You say, they would send them away and say, we don't need your testimony anymore because we already have valid witnesses. So they say, so why should I bother to come next time? Gemara. Now, Gemara asks the following question. It says, Hainu Liftei Achamo, Hainu Litzfona. Hainu Liachar Achamo, Hainu Lidroma. Hainu means the same. In other words, the question that says Liftei Achama, was the moon in front of the sun? That's the same as asking Hainu Litzfona, was it to the north or to the south of the sun? Hainu Liachar Achama, and the question that says, was the moon behind the sun? Hainu Lidroma, then it's the same as asking, was it to the south? So the question is, why did they need all these various questions if they are the same? So Omar Abaye, gave the following answer. He says, Pegimos, he added the following question. He says, Pegimos sol if they are chamo, ol liachar chamo. He added the following question. the Begimah, you know, we talked when just this past Saturday night, for example, at the end of davening over here in Kadima, so we said Kiddush Halavada, okay. And one of the things that you say, the Kiddush Halavada, the Beidush and the Malays, Begimah Halavada, that he should fill what the moon is lacking. In other words, the general picture of the moon is that, you know, it should be a complete moon, right? But when we see it as a new moon, all that you see is what? Just a little sliver, right? All that you see is this, instead of seeing the whole thing. So that therefore we say that the Begimah, in other words, what it is lacking, its fault, is, you know, in the other direction, which of course actually should be which way? If this is the correct picture, then we see that this, which is the Begimah, is going to be turned away from the sun, not towards the sun. Right? If it's in this position.
It's not of the illuminated.
Right.
Evening is an inverse. Father for the evening, father for the night.
Yeah. Okay, but we're talking specifically right now at the moment of new moon, okay? All right, so he says, ask the following question also. Was where the moon is lacking, is it in front of the sun, and does it face towards the sun, or does it face be away, literally behind, or away from the sun, okay? So Imomar, if he said as follows, Lifnei Achamor, that is facing towards the sun, Le'amaklum, again for the same reason, because the moon should never appear this way, it should only appear this way, okay? Like this. If I turn it upside down, they're all going to get confused. So, all right. So from this, of course, we see what? We see that in the final analysis, the position of the moon is quite known to the court, right? And based upon how the moon relates to the sun, you know, in the appearance when the new moon appears in the sky, so they would know whether, on the basis of the questions, whether the witnesses really had seen it, or were they simply giving mistaken testimony or false testimony. Now, as long as we are talking about that the moon has a Begimah, in other words, he has something missing in it, right? So, the Omer Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Yochanan said in that connection, my Dixiv, what is the meaning of the pasuk that we have in the book of Iyov, the book of Job? It's written, Amshel v'fachad imo, ose shalom imramov. Incidentally, you see the last three words, this is the source of saying Osa Shalom Imremov, you know, with which we conclude the Kaddish every time. Okay? So, Hamshav Afachad Imo means literally that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam has dominion, and also he has, let's say, awe, you know, that he inspires awe, right, in his presence. And then it also says that he makes peace in the heavens. So, what is the peace that he makes in the heavens? So, we have a drash over here. It says, "Miyolom rwaso chamo pegimaso shel levono, velo pegimaso shel keshes." Okay. It says that the sun has never seen sun. Here we are. Has never seen literally what's wrong, the fault, right? What's missing in the moon? Okay. And the same thing, if there's a rainbow, it's the same story. That it never sees, you know, how the rainbow curves, doesn't see the, what shall we call it, the concave part of the rainbow. In other words, you know, the one that looks like that. The sun never sees that. It's always the other one. The sun is this way, and the rainbow is there, so it's okay. So, why? What is the reason for this? So he says, "Begimaso shalavona." What is missing in the moon is the chol shadata. The reason being that the moon itself feels very bad about the fact that it lost. You know, we say, again, coming back to what we said in Kiddush Levana, right? We say that based upon the verse that we have in Bereshit. It's written over there that Vayasal Hashem, that Vayasal Kim, that God made Eshnei Hamaoros Hagadolim. He made the two great big luminaries or sources of illumination, meaning, of course, the sun and the moon, right? So based on that, in other words, the moon technically should have been the same size as the sun. But what happened? So if we read the Rashi over there, we see he quotes a medrash that we have in Bereshis Rabbah, which says that the moon did not like the idea of the rivalry. The moon wanted, you know, to rule equally together with the sun, and the result was that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam had to diminish the moon, okay? And so therefore what we see from here is that, okay, the moon is taka diminished, because the sun is hamaor hagadol, the memshel is hayom, right? And the moon is hamaor hakotan, it's the small luminary, the memshel is hayom, right? Pardon me?
It's also not an independent source.
No, of course it's not. I mean, this we know.
This
we know. Look, our forefathers also knew that. They also knew that, okay. But, you know, a drash is a drash, okay? So the point is now that the moon feels very bad that it got a demotion, that it had to be shrunk in size in comparison to the sun, okay? That being the case, if the sun, right? If the sun would see the moon and the moon would turn in this direction, then in that case, the sun would always be looking at the what's missing in the moon, and there would be like a source of ha ha ha, you know, I'm bigger than you and I'm better than you, and so on and so forth. So in order to spare the feelings of the moon, that's what he means over here by Chol Shadato, right? So therefore the Rebbeinu Shel Olam made it always that the Begima, what's missing over here, should always be turned away from the moon. Okay, so it's a very interesting drash. Yes.
Huh?
Yes, that the beginning of the moon should always be turned away from the sun. Correct. Okay. Yeah. How about the rainbow? So he says, in the case, you know, pegim asur shel keshes, it's the lo lemru of the achamor, and this is the next page, yirei komishadya. Okay, that those idol worshippers who worship the sun as a deity should not say, do you know why in the rainbow it's turned away from the you know, from the sun? It's so that they should not say that the rainbow, remember the Hebrew word keshes, which we translate as rainbow, but the more common meaning is simply a bow. And of course that's the word that we use in the Bible in order to indicate, you know, bow as in bow and arrow. Okay? So that being the case, they shouldn't say that you know what? The rainbow is trying to shoot arrows at the sun because it's so angry, you know. So in order that
looks like a bow, right?
Right. In order to to preserve the reputation of the sun from the rainbow. That's why the rainbow faces in the opposite direction. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
It's interesting. Interesting, I got it. Right. Mm-hmm. All right. So now we continue on the Chav Dalet Amid Aleph. Okay. Yeah. Chav Dalet Amid Aleph. Okay. So, remember among the various questions, they already asked, you know, which way was it turned, right? Was it the north, the south? Which way was the moon turned, according to Abaya as well? And so, okay, God's fine. And then the next question in line was, Kamo Yogavoa, well, I know you know that, right? How high was it when you saw it, and which way was it turned, right? So, Tana. Okay, Tanachada, a certain Tana, a certain teacher, taught as follows. He says, if he said, Litzfona, right, that the moon was to the north, then we said, Devar of Kayomim, then he's telling the truth. Lidromo, if he says that it was to the south, lo amar klum. Now I ask you to look back at the previous page, and you see that it's booked verkehrt. Right? The bottom, take a look, the last one. If he said, what? If he said, then the Mishnah, right? The Mishnah says, if he says, Litzfoino, right, to the north, then in that particular case, we say that he's not telling the truth, right? Whereas if he said to the south, then he's telling the truth. So it's bungs pakeret from what we have over here. So this being the case, it's a contradiction, right? So the whole Tanya, didn't we learn Ipcha? Just the opposite, where it says the Dromo, if it's to the south, the Vorv Kayomim, right, then he's telling the truth. And the Tzvon Eliyom Aklum, and if it's to the north, then not. So how do you resolve the contradiction between these two statements? Between so he says, like Kasha. No Kasha. He says, Kan Bimos HaChama, Kan Bimos HaGishomim. He says that the position relative to a human being changes depending upon whether it is in Yemos HaChama, literally that time of the year in which the sun is blazing hot, in other words, in the summertime, as compared to Yemos HaGshomim, the time of the year when it's rainy, which of course is in Eretz Yisrael, the winter time. Okay, that it appears in a different direction depending upon that. Well, I can vouch. I know that the art scroll goes into a Gansa Megillah over here at this particular point, because it's a difficult concept to understand. Okay. Theoretically, it should appear the same way at all times, right?
Not necessarily.
I say theoretically. I mean that the moon relative to the new moon relative to the sun should always be in the same way. But he may be talking about something else.
Then
right.
The sun is below the south of the equator.
Yeah.
Everything north looks different than the south of the equator. And I think it may have something to do with that.
That's an interesting chiddush. Okay. It's an interesting chiddush. So maybe they knew more about that. About the South African, Australia, and so on and so forth.
The path of the sun changes. It changes it with respect to the path of the moon.
Yeah.
And I think you'll find if you look at it astronomically, you'll find that there is an explanation.
Obviously, they must have observed that there was a difference, because otherwise they wouldn't come up with such an explanation that it makes a difference as to whether it's summertime or whether it's wintertime. So obviously they did, and the Rashi goes into this in great detail.
The sun's higher at certain times, the other sun's lower at certain
times. I mean, it's what Rashi is saying over there. If you take a look, it's a long, long Rashi, beginning on the third line over there, beginning at the end of the second line, right? Right? And he says, Bimos HaChamo, it says, during the summertime, keep going. It's for example, Biyom Oroch, right, when the day is long, Shotakufas Thomas of the summer season. So, Chamer, Shokas, Nesof Barat, okay? Then the sun, he says, sets at the very end of the west, the Tzad Tzafon, and it's turning, you know, towards the north. And he has a quotation from the Irvin to back that out, where it says, Chamer, Yotzor, Biyom Oroch, Shokas, Biyom Oroch. Says over there that the sun, it rises on a long day and sets on a long day and so on. It's open eight sofa, all right, and this is towards the north. So it says, Chama Yotzeis Bayom Kotzar, Vishokas Bayom Kotzar. On the other hand, when the day is short, then in that particular case, Zeh open eight Darom, right? This is towards the south, all right? And then he says, Nisam Vitishrei. But in the month of Nisan and Tishrei, because those are the months in which you have the equinox, right? Where day and night are equal. So, Biyom Kotz, Yotzis Bachatzi Mizrach, Shakaz Bachatzi Marav. Then it rises halfway in the east and it sets halfway in the west. So, the Kufas Nisan, Hayom Va'alayla Shavin. At that particular time, day and night are the same. that is the same in length, of course, right? So Chama Yotzeis Bachatzim Mizrach, Mahaleches Chatzim Mizrach. And the sun goes halfway in the east and continues towards the east, the Chol Dorot, and then throughout the south, the Chatzim Arab, and also half, literally, of the west, in other words, and then the Shokaz, and it says when it's halfway towards the west.
No, this whole
passage. Lila writes, it's a very, very difficult thing.
And this whole passage is not intended to teach us astronomy.
Yeah, obviously.
It's intended to tell us that the competence of the witness that is basically
right. There's no question about it. Right.
So, I mean, that's what it's...
We understand that, but nevertheless, there's such a glaring contradiction between these two that, you know, it takes quite a bit of ingenuity,
right,
to straighten it out. Okay. Okay. Then, Tana Rabbanan. Then we have another statement. Okay, it says Echad Omer Gavriya Beis Mardeos Echad Omer Gimel. Okay, this is in reference to the height. Remember, that was also a question: how high was it above the earth? So, if one witness says that it was twice the length of a Mardas, the question is, what is Mardas? The answer is that this is something that they use
goad
to goad an animal. What do you mean to goad? You give him a shtoch, right? And you know, that makes the animal move. Okay, yeah. So that's what they mean by the word goad. To goad somebody on, we use it, you know, metaphorically, the same thing, right? In other words, you incite somebody to do it by giving him a shtoch, you give him a you stick in
the thing, right.
All right. Okay. Now, the point is that let's say you had a pole of standard size, okay? And that pole had a steel needle at the end, okay? Which was a common implement that farmers used. You know, they had cattle and they wanted the cattle to move a little bit, so they used it. So this became like a measure of length, okay? It's a measure of length. So if he says it was twice the length of this, let's say, in our modern terms, let's say we talk about a yardstick, okay?
All right.
Yeah, a cattle prod, exactly. That's the word that I was thinking of, right. Let's say a yardstick, okay?
Yeah.
Yardstick represents a certain amount of length. I mean, we know that. The wasp represents 3 feet, okay? Or let's say you had a meter. We know exactly how much a meter is, okay. Now, let's say meter, okay. If he says that it was 2 meters high, so that already gives us a general idea, you see, of, you know, what it is. So, the point that is being made over here is, if one says that it was 2 meters high, and the other one says that it was 3 meters high, in other words, what is the difference between them? Only 1 meter, right? And in that case, what do we say? Eidus and Kayemis. Then we say that the testimony is valid. Why? Because, you know, like taking a poll, we always have, or statistics, we always have a certain margin of error,
right,
correct? Which we accept as being logical, and, you know, we've accepted that happens, that people don't see exactly the same, but close enough, okay? So in this case, it's close enough. So therefore, we say that the testimony they give is okay. But Echad Omer, let's say one witness says Gimel, he says that I saw it was 3 meters high. The Echad Omer, hey, and the other one says it was 5 meters high, and in that case, innocent material. Then in that case, we say that testimony is not acceptable, because here, the discrepancy is already too much. Okay?
But what's the discrepancy between 3 and 5, which makes it 2? Or, in general, everything is bigger. Right.
Well, I would say the same thing would be true. Let's say if one said it was 5 and the other one said 6, it would be acceptable. But if one said 5 and the other one said 7, then it would be. The variance, exactly. When the variance is only 1, then in that particular case, we would say that that's an acceptable margin of error.
Of course,
the other one is
basically, the bit measure is too big, then we know something is wrong.
Right, right. Okay. But Aval, he says, Mitztarfin Leinis Acheres. If the testimony they gave, one says two, right, and the other one says four or five or something, or one says three and the other one says five, whatever it is. If along comes another witness, and when they question him, and they say to him, and what height did you see it? And let's say he said five, then in that case, the one who said five and he, we would say that the right, the testimony would be confirmed and we would accept it, okay. Or if they'd said three or whatever it may be, okay?
They already knew the correct answer.
Oh, yeah, right. I mean, obviously, I wouldn't be surprised if they went out also and they took a look outside to see.
Kind of a formality, that's all.
Right. Also had the, actually, they had probably written down measurements to know exactly what to test.
Right.
They needed collaboration on their own legal
sites. Yeah, right. There's no question. But you see, as a general rule, the members of the Beis Din could not serve as witnesses. They had to have independent witnesses. That's the point. Okay.
But
so I say, as a rule, in an extreme emergency, then in that particular case, let's say the Roman authorities are ready to close down the shop and arrest them, or something like that, then in that particular case, then the judges would be empowered to serve as witnesses.
Nobody
as well.
Came after
Susan Mays
was on the
measure. Yeah, okay. So that's part of the thing that we'll be discussing, you know, very, very soon. But I just wanted to point out in reference, you know, to your question, that later on we'll learn that actually Rabbi Gamliel had pictures of the moon in various positions so that, you know, he could question them even further about it. Right. Like this or that, exactly. Okay.
And drawn pictures, yeah.
Yeah. Tadur Rabbanan, another thing in reference to the testimony. Reinuhu Bamaya. If they say, we saw it in the water. In other words, it was a body of water, and they say, we saw the moon reflected over there. Okay. Okay. Or we knew who about Shoshis. We saw it looking, while we were lighting a lantern, and we were looking around, and we saw it through the panes, you know. In other words, the lantern had translucent, or transparent, let's say transparent panes, okay? So we saw it through that, okay. Or we knew who about Ovid. We saw it in the clouds, but presumably, you know, the clouds then covered it over again, right? So, Ein Me'idin Olam. Then in that case, we say that we don't accept this testimony as being correct. Okay? We don't accept that. What if they said, Chetzio Bamayim, V'chetzio Be'ovim, right? V'chetzio Ba'ashoshis? What if they said that half the moon was reflected in the water, or half the moon was seen through the clouds, or half was seen through this lantern? Again, what? They need the law, and we still will not accept their testimony. Ashto, Kuli Amrit. So now the Gemara asks the following question. Says, now look here, it says, if we said, that is, if the witnesses had said that they saw the whole thing in the water or through the land, or whatever it may be, right, and we didn't accept it, right? So Chetzim Ibai, so do we have to state the fact that even if they claim that they saw half of it, how can we accept that? So we have to give the following explanation. It says, if they say that half of it we saw reflected in the water, but the other half we actually saw up in the sky, or we saw half of it covered by clouds, but half of it actually was in this, you know, in a clear sky. Or chetzio ba'ashoshis, half of it was in, you know, we saw it through the panes of the lantern. And chetzio ba'arkiyah, and the other half we saw actually through in the sky. So nevertheless, even in such a case, even though they say that we saw part of it, you know, in the sky itself, but still we cannot accept the testimony because it's not a complete testimony. Now, here's another thing. Let's say the witnesses say, we saw the moon, and then we didn't see it anymore. In other words, clouds came and covered it over, right? So, ain me ignorant. Okay? Then they cannot, again, this testimony is not acceptable. What if they say, Kol hochi chazulo, the Asli? What if they say, we saw everything and then? And then went away, disappeared. So, Abaye said, hochi konat. Meaning what? It says, we knew who me'eglenu. We actually saw it with our own eyes. The shabdim iroso, and then we went to look at it again. Midatenu. Me'eglenu means sort of like we saw it without having planned to see it. But there it was, okay? And now we returned again. In other words, we once again looked at it, midatenu. Purposely to see, to confirm it, but the lowri knew, but we didn't see it the second time. So, ain't even a lot. Again, we do not accept this testimony. My tabo. What is the reason? So he says, Amor kubiso de ivo de yamuhu de chosim. We'd say, no, what he saw simply was like a whitening of the clouds. But you didn't actually see the moon. You know, at times we have this problem when we want to make Kiddush Nevada over here, and we're not sure whether we see the moon or we're only seeing a reflection behind the moon, behind the clouds, and that's it. It looks a little white over there, but you know, so obviously in that case we can't accept it until we actually see the moon itself. Yeah.
Is there a measure as to how long, how many seconds it would have to see?
No. No, even if you see it just
actually,
for a very
keep
short while.
Right.
right. But it doesn't say you have to watch it for 5 minutes or anything like that, because some nights you'll never see it again if you don't do it the first time.
All right, so if we take and extend that to the moon.
Right.
And we only see a glimpse of it. We see it going behind the cloud.
Right.
Make the bracha,
right.
Or
you can make the bracha as long as you actually had seen it, really.
You have to really see it first.
Right, right. You have to see it.
I mean, without the clouds, anyone
without
in
the
clouds.
Without the clouds, correct. Right.
Yeah.
I would say probably, you should at least finish the bracha before it disappears. But nevertheless, even if you saw it and you started the bracha, then you can continue with it. Yeah. Okay, now we have a new Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Rosh Bezdin Omer Mekudash. The head of the Bezdin says, it is sanctified. The Kohan on Acharav, and everybody that answers after him, the Kudash Mekudash. Yes, it is sanctified. Yes, it is sanctified. So, God's fine. This is the declaration, in other words, that has to be made by the Rosh Bezdin, okay? Making it an official proclamation that it is now Rosh Chodesh, correct? Now it says, Bein Shanira Bismano, Bein Shalom Bismano, Mikachin Oso. The Mishnah here says that whether the new moon appeared at the right time. What do we mean by the right time? The answer is, after 29 days, on the 30th day, the moon appeared. Okay? So, we proclaim Mekudosh. And what if it didn't appear that day? What if it didn't appear till the following day? Till the 31st? So in that case, he says, according to the Mishnah says, we still declare it, you know, Mekudosh. But about this, of course, we have a difference of opinion, as we'll see when we go in the Gemara now. But the Mishnah continues and says, he says, in loy niro bismano, ein mekachin oso. He says, if it did not appear on the proper day, meaning, you know, the day following 29 days, on the 30th day, if it did not appear on that particular time, then in that case, they do not say the kudash. Why? Because in heaven they already decided that this was going to be Rosh Chodesh. In other words, the 30th day was going to be Rosh Chodesh and not the 29th day. I mean the other way around. I mean the 30th and not the 31st day. Yeah, I'm thinking in terms of how long the month was, but obviously, if the month is 29, then Rosh Chodesh has to be on the 30th.
Right.
But if not, then it has to be on the 31st. Of course, you know, the problem that you always have is with 2 days for Chodesh. But remember that 2 days for Chodesh means that the first day
is really the
30th day of the preceding month, whereas the first day of the new month is the 31st. Right. Yeah. Okay.
The problem is if you have 3 months succeeding, following each other, which are all 30 days, then you theoretically have a problem.
Yeah, right, right. But that doesn't normally happen. Yeah, it doesn't normally happen. It could happen only under the following circumstance. If Tishrei, which is always 30 days, right? And then the question is only with Cheshvan and Kislev. Those 2 months can be either 29 days or 30 days. Okay? So the possibility might be that you have Tishrei, Cheshvan, and Kislev will be each of them 30. I say it's a possibility. It doesn't usually happen, but it is possible. Yes. Yeah, it happens sometimes, right? Apart from that, it can never happen, because all the other months go according to 29 days, 30 days, 29 days, 30 days, etc., etc. All right. So, getting back to the Mishnah, Gemara asks the following question. It says, "Bina hani milei." It says, where do we find in the Bible a source for the fact that that the Rosh Pesin has to say Mikudosh, right? So Amar Rab Chia Bar Gamda, he said, Amar Rabbi Yosef Ben Shaul, who said in the name of Rabbi Yosef Ben Shaul, Amar Rabbi, who said in the name of Rabbi, you know, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, he says, Amar Kro, there's a pasuk in the Torah. What does it say? It says, Vayedav Moshe Esmayadei Hashem, that Moses proclaimed the festivals, in other words, the fixed seasons of the Lord, right? So, if that's the particular case, you know, Mekan, from this we see, Sherosh Bezdin, Omer Mekudosh. We see that from this pasuk, that the head of the Bezdin is the one who pronounces the words Mekudosh, because after all, Moshe Rabbeinu was the head of the Bezdin as far as the people of Israel in his time. Correct? Okay. And then it says, V'chol ha'am oinen acharav mekudosh mekudosh. And then everybody replies, mekudosh mekudosh. Sanctified, sanctified, right? So, minalon. Again, what is the source for this? So, Omar Rav Papa found it, Omakra, in the following passage. Says Elam Oyadei Hashem, right? Again, that's the pasuk that they first started, right? These are the festivals of the Lord, Asher Tikru Osan, which you shall proclaim them. This is what it's written. So he says, Kori Bey, but you know, if you take a look in the text of the Torah, the word is not written with a vav; it's written simply Aleph, Tov, Mem. So, you can read it, he says, as Atem, you. In other words, you, the people, having heard the head of the Bezdin say Mekudosh, you answer Mekudosh, Mekudosh. This is how he derives it. Okay? Rab Nachman bar Yitzhak Omar, he has a different pitch on the same idea. He says, Elohei Moadoi, it's written, these are my festivals. Good, that's the English translation. But if you were to translate it word by word, what does it say? Ela, these, haim, they are my festivals, right? So, what is this haim doing over there? You understand? So, he says, why is the word haim there? He says, because it means haim, they, the people, yomru moadai, right? Yomru moadai, right? They will proclaim, you know, my fixed seasons. In other words, when is Rosh Chodesh, etc., etc. Now, Mekudosh, Mekudosh, Trei Zimne, Lomani, why does Mekudosh, Mekudosh have to be recited twice? So he says, Dichsin, because we have the pasuk which says, Mikroe Kodesh, which means literally the callings of holiness. because, you know, the word mikra is like the word kore, which means to call. Naturally, what it means is to call the people together to celebrate the festival. You see, this is the original idea. But the fact that it says not mikra kodesh, which we have in the, you know, for example, Chag, Ashurz, Chag Asur, and so on, and says mikra kodesh yelochem, right? Should be mikra kodesh, okay. But mikra a kodesh already implies twice, so that therefore this gives rise to why they should say mikudosh, mikudosh. Okay. What? Yeah, of course it means to proclaim. I'm not saying no. Okay? Yeah. But the point is that we use it because, you know, people were called together in order to come and to celebrate the Yotah. This is the point why it's called Nikroko. Okay. All right. Then the Mishnah continues. And says, Rabbi Yezer ben Sadok, he disagrees, remember, with the Mishnah, which said what? The Mishnah said that whether it appeared Bismano or Shalom Bismano, right? In other words, whether it appeared on the 30th or on the 31st, in either case, they still have to say Mekudosh. Well, Rabbi Yezer ben Sadok disagrees. He says, you know, lo nira bismano e mekachinosa, right? In other words, that if it doesn't occur on the 30th day that they sight the new moon, then on the 31st day they're not going to have to pronounce, you know, mikudosh. So Tanya, in that connection we learned. Kalimo omer bismano e mekachinosa. Shelo bismano mekachinosa. All right. According to Palimo, he was a recognized authority, but needless to say, recognized authorities can disagree with one another. Not only in the Torah world, but in the non-Torah world as well.
Right.
So Rabbi Eliezer ben Sadok, we already put down as what? If it occurs bismano, then in that case, mekachin, but if not, then ain't mekachin. Palimo has just the opposite. What does Palimo say? He says that bismano, if it occurs on the 30th day, then ain't mekachin. You don't have to announce it because it should be clear that, you know, to everybody, that's the right time. But shalom bismano, the fact that it occurs not on the day that you expected, but on the following day, then mekachin. So you have to proclaim it so that everybody will know it, right? Then we have another Rabbi Eliezer. This is not Rabbi Eliezer ben Sadok, but Rabbi Eliezer ben Reb Shimon, as you see in the brackets over there. Okay? This Rabbi Eliezer ben Reb Shimon, he says, Benkach o Benkach e Mekachin oisa. He says they never have to proclaim Mekudosh. Why not? Why does he disagree with everybody? He says, because, I'll tell you, I got a pasuk. He says, Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Vekidashtem Ishnasa Chamishim, that you shall proclaim as holy the 50th year. In other words, the Yovel, the Jubilee, that the Besdin has to say that it is Mekudosh, right? Or Ashanah Mekudeshes, or something like that, for that effect, right? But Shanim, in other words, years, yes, those, years, you do proclaim as being holy the Yiyat of Mekadesh, but you do not proclaim as holy Chodoshim, months. Alright, so that's his system. That's Rabbi Shimon ben Eleazar. Alright, that'd be Rabbi Eleazar ben Shimon, excuse me. Omar Rabbi Yehuda, so Rabbi Yehuda is this Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, the name of Shmuel, because Rabbi Yehuda was already an Amora. Okay, so, and he quoted Shmuel, who was an earlier Amora. He says, the name of Shmuel says, Halacha Rabbi Eliezer ben Reb Tzadok. He says that the Halacha Taka follows Rabbi Eliezer ben Reb Tzadok, who says what? That only if it appears in its regular time do you proclaim the Kurdish. But if it doesn't appear in the regular time, then in that particular case, there's no need to pronounce it because automatically it's going to be Rosh Chodesh. All right. Says that the halacha follows it. So Abaye says, you know, we have another statement which sort of supports this opinion. Namely, it says, Ra'u Bezdim, this is accidentally, it's a Mishnah that's going to follow. It says, Ra'u Bezdim, if the Bezdim, the Chol Yisrael, and all the people, saw the new moon, and not only that, but Nechkiru Ha'edim, the witnesses have been questioned. But below his pikuloma kudosh achechashecha, but the Bezdin did not have time enough to say mekudosh until it got dark. By the way, when does the Bezdin have to accept testimony? The answer is during the day. Okay, because normally a Bezdin does not meet at night; it normally meets during the day. There are unusual situations, but as a normal rule, this is it. Official business has to be done by day and not by night. Okay. All right. So let's say the day was a short day. The witnesses came late. And by the time that they finished questioning the witnesses and they were ready to agree that Taka, the 30th day, was Rosh Chodesh, it was already too late. It was already dark. So in that particular case, Harez and Ubar. Yeah, so he said, right, that you do not, in that particular case, pronounce the word Mekudosh, because automatically the moon is going to, that is, the month is going to be Me'ubar. Harezim Ubar. So he says, Me'ubar in. Me'ubar, yeah. The month, Taka, is now on the 31st day, right? But Mekudosh, lo. We don't see that the mention is made that it is to be declared holy, which would of course support the position of Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok, who said that only if it appears in the proper time, in other words on the 30th day, should they pronounce it Mekudesh. Otherwise, no, because automatically it's going to be Me'ub. So this brings out lends support to his opinion. Okay. So he says, Ubar Itzarech Leh. Yes. The fact that the Bezdin has to still proclaim what? Not Mekudosh, but that the month is Ubar, that the month is on the 31st day, right? This we need. Salkadate Chamino, because if you might think, Chol Rahu Bezdin Chol Yisrael, inasmuch as the Mishnah says that the Bezdin and all Israel have seen it, if parsama, then in that case it's known to everybody, and it should not therefore be declared as being on the following day. Therefore we learn that this is not so, that if they did not have time to actually proclaim that the month is Me'ubar, the month is Mekudosh on the 30th day, then in that particular case, then it's automatically Me'ubar one day later on the 31st. All right, now here we have what I mentioned before about Rabban Gamliel, where it says, Demus Tzuros Levono Choyelul Rabban Gamliel Betavla Uvekosel Bal Yoso. Okay? Rabban Gamliel, who of course was the head of the Bezdin in his time, right? He had, as we'll see, in his attic, that's on the Yoso, right, in his attic. So he had on a tabla, right? You see how the two words are the same, right? And actually it's a Latin word. But, there are Latin words, Greek words, and so on that enter the vocabulary, right? So, it's like the Latin tabula, T-A-B-U-L-A, tablet, okay? Remember, we talk about a tabula rasa, in other words, is the mind, a tablet which is absolutely clear of any marks, and then you just keep on making indentations, marks on it as you go along by making associations or things like that or not, okay? So, at any rate, he had a tablet, and on the wall, he had some kind of a hanging over there, where he had shapes of the moon. Okay? Shebahen Mares Hayedyotos, and he would ask, you know, the ordinary people who came to testify, the Yomer, and he would say to them, Achazer or Yisa or Chazer, tell me, when you saw the moon, did it look like this, or did it look like this? And they had them in different directions, different shapes and sizes and so on and so forth. And on the basis of that, he could find some confirmation. Okay. Now, this, however, raises a very important problem that we'll start today, and we'll call it a halt in another few minutes when we turn the page. Okay? Gemara wants to know its problem. It says, Amishore, tell me, is it permissible to make pictures? Is it permissible to make pictures, in this particular case, of course, of heavenly bodies? Okay? Because, you know, the problem is, it relates directly right? You're not allowed to make a statue or any picture, a sheba shemayim emal of anything in the sky above, or haaretz betachas, or on the earth beneath, or al hamayim, you know, in the water, even underneath the earth. You know, so it would mean, in other words, you're not allowed to make any kind of a drawing or any kind of a shape or anything, and not to sculpt and things like that. You're not allowed to do these things, right? I don't have to tell you that there are some people, back when photography was first started, that they refused to let themselves be photographed for the same reason. Yeah, there are some, right?
Because of the old,
yeah, right, right.
Robotics.
Right. Yeah, I mean, our ideas have changed because of the fact that, you know, you could find it. It's a heter if you look for it. Okay, but the Gemara raises this question: Mishori, is it permitted? The Hoksiv, doesn't it say in the Torah, Lo Sasuni Ti? This is the pasuk that we find right after the giving of the Ten Commandments, at the end of Parsha Yisro. It says over there, Lo Sasuni Ti, do not make with me Elohei Chesed, Elohei Zohav, right? Gods of silver, gold, right? Lo Sasu Lachem, you're not allowed to make unto yourselves. Okay, this is what the pasuk says. So they say, isn't it written, Lo Sasun Iti, do not make together with me? Lo Sasun, don't make Kidmus Shamshai, anything in the shape or the form of those that serve me. Meaning, all the forces of nature serve to Ribbono Shel Olam, correct? Human beings are expected to serve to Ribbono Shel Olam, you understand? All God's creatures are finally His servants, right? So that, therefore, do not make anything that resembles them. So Omar Abaye, comes with the following heter, so to speak. He says, Lo Osva Torah Ela Shamoshin She'ef Shalatzos Kemoisa. Says the Torah only prohibits those kinds of servants that you can make just like them. But anything that you can't make like them, then in that case, it wouldn't apply. And he says, Kedetanya, as for example, he says, we have learned, Layasa Odom based on this Hechel. Person, when he builds a house, he should not build it exactly to the dimensions or the forms of the buildings that existed in the Beis HaMikdash. Don't make a copy of the Beis HaMikdash. That's one. Or Achsadra. The Achsadra, this was what we call like a portico, a porch or something like that, which you know, was part of the walls around the Beis HaMikdash, okay? Was an open-ended porch light, okay? Or Tavnis Ulam, or for example, anything in the shape of the building, you know, that preceded the Holy of Holies. That's the Ulam, right? Or Chatzer Keneged Azora. Or, for example, the courtyard. Don't make anything which has the exact dimensions of the courtyard which existed before the various places which were permitted. One was the Esvas Loshem, where the women could go, or the Esvas Yisrael, where the men could go, you understand? Or the Esvas HaKohanim, where only Kohanim could go, and things like that. Don't make anything that resembles that. Or Keneged Shulchan. Shulchan Keneged Shulchan says, don't make, for example, a table which looks exactly like the table that existed in the Beis HaMikdash. You know, it was made of gold, it was made to hold the bread, the Lechem HaPonim, from Shabbos to Shabbos, and so on and so forth. Or menorah, Keneged menorah. Don't make a menorah which looks exactly like the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. Meaning what? As we see, he means don't make a seven-branched menorah. Avolosa, but according to Abaye, you can make, next page, shel chamisha, v'shel shisha, v'shel shmona. You can make a menorah which has, for example, five branches, right? Or six branches, or eight branches, that you can make. But v'shel shiva, lo yatze. But a seven-branch candlestick, you're not allowed to make. Even if you make them from all other types of metal other than what the original menorah was, and of course what was the menorah made of? It was mikshatasa zohov, right? It was gold that was beaten from one piece. So let's say if you wanted to make an iron menorah, right? Would that be permissible? So he says no, not if it's seven branched. You understand?
Right.
Because it too closely resembles the menorah that existed in the Beis HaMikdash. Well, about that, naturally, it's a question. Rabbi Yosef Bar Yehuda Omer, he goes one better. He said, Af Shaleitz Lo Yaseh. Says, even if you were to make a menorah, not of metal, but if you made it of wood, even in that case, you're not allowed to make. And they bring the example, Kedera She'osu Malchi Beis Hashmonai, just as the kings of the Hasmonean dynasty, you know, those were the followers of, Shimon, who was the first brother of Yehuda Maccabi, who became the first ruler, because Yehuda was killed in battle, okay? So, and his brother became the head of the first of the kings of the Hasmonean dynasty. And, when they came to the Beis HaMikdash, obviously the menorah had been defiled or whatever had happened to it. And so they decided to make one of their own. And how did they make it? So apparently they made it out of spears or something like that. This is what the next line says. Amruloi. So they said to Abai, he says, Misham Raiya. He says, they said to Rabbi Yosef Bar Yehuda, they said, this is proof, he says. Shvudin shel bazel hoyu. All that they did was to take, literally, shvud is a spit, you know, pointed spit, right. Yeah, that's what they used. It was made out of iron, and then the chipum be'etz, and then they covered it with wood. So this is how they made the menorah after they rededicated the Beis HaMikdash. Hey, shiro, but then, as time went on and they became richer, then asawum shel kesef. Then what did they do? Then they made the menorah out of silver. No, kesef is silver. Right. Okay. Chazru heshu. And then when they became even richer again, then asawum shel zohav. Right. And then they made them out of gold. All right. I think we'll stop at this particular point, and then we'll continue from here. And yetz Hashem next week. At the usual time and place. Okay. Tonight is the June 21st. We give vault. Worst time going to. Okay. And we are on Chav Dalad Amud Beis at this particular point. And we are continuing now from where we left off. All right. Now, last time we were talking about the fact that things which have a design that can be reproduced may not be reproduced if they have something to do with the Beis HaMikdash, right?
not allowed to make, for example, a building that looks just like the way the ancient temple looked. Not allowed to even make a courtyard that's exactly the same dimension as the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. You're not allowed to make a menorah of seven branches. This is the last thing that we discussed.
Right.
So all the seven branches, the menorahs that we see, they're very doubtful as to whether it's not a violation of the law, right? Okay. Like you find it, for example, the state of Israel uses a seven-branched candlestick, as its a logo, so to speak, right? The B'nai B'rith has always used a seven-branch candlestick as its logo. But as we saw from the Gemara over here, you want to make a menorah, make it five,
make it
six, make it eight, right? But don't make it seven. Okay. So, therefore, the general principle is then that at this point, anything that has to do with the temple of old, we're not allowed to reproduce exactly, because this would be considered like a Chilul Hashem.
Why do they have the? Do they have a replica of the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim?
Okay, you ask a very, very good question, and frankly, I haven't heard of anybody objecting to it. But I have to say, number one, that it's made at scale. It has not, it's not made the exact dimensions.
Obviously.
Okay,
but,
yeah,
but it's still a replica of it.
It's a replica, correct. But since it's not the exact dimension, so we can already find the Pesach Heter,
if the menorahs are not the same dimension as the menorah, then I suppose you have a Heter too. Yeah.
You could say that. I wouldn't say no.
I did say it.
I mean, if we're looking for a Heter, we'll make a Heter. You know what I mean? You don't have to go to you don't have to go to the Reform in order to find a Heter for this. Okay, but the fact of the matter is that certain things we consider so holy that we don't want to say that we are doing exactly the way it exists. The night of the Seder, we're not allowed to eat roast meat. Why not? Because it would look like giving the Korban Pesach back in the days of old. So therefore, there's a law in the Shulchan Aruch that says that the first night we do not eat roast meat. Okay? And of course, if you observe two nights of Pesach, as we do, two Sidorim, in that case, then the same thing would apply, that you don't eat roast meat the night of the Seder. Pesach day, yes, it's permitted, but not Pesach night. Why? It shouldn't look like the Korban Pesach. It shouldn't look like we are, as the Gemara would say, Makdish Kochim Barachim. What is it? Okay. So, that being the case, you see that it applied here is something, which technically might be permissible, and yet we observe, an Isser against doing it. So all the balabusters who are, careful about these things, they're not going to make, for example, not just roast meat, but I hate to tell you, not even roast chicken. Nobody ever sacrificed a chicken in the Beis HaMikdash. Doves, yes. pigeons, doves, they were certain types of sacrifices, they had them. But chickens, never. Nobody ever sacrificed a chicken. Nevertheless, because we say we don't want to give people ideas that if we permit them to roast chicken, then what are they going to do? Then they're going to roast meat. And if they roast meat, they'll think that they're reproducing the Korban Pesach, and that we don't want them to do. You can talk about it, but don't do it, okay? So it falls in a similar category then, you see. Don't make something that looks exactly like the Beis HaMikdash, and certainly don't reproduce the menorah the way it stood in those days. Now, I also have to add one other word. Exactly what did the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash look like? And that, there are differences of opinion. The opinion of the Rambam, for example, is one that the Lubavitcher follow. Okay? But it looks sort of like this. I don't know if you saw it, sort of like an angle going in towards the center. Okay? On the other hand, there's the very famous representation of the menorah that we find on the Arch of Titus in Rome, where this was among the spoils taken from the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim by the Romans. and brought, you know, to Rome in order to show off, in order to indicate, you know, that the Jewish people are finished as a nation, and Rome is victorious. Just as they minted a coin showing the daughter of Zion lying on the ground, bound, captive, with the Roman soldier, you know, standing over her, and underneath the two words in Latin, Judaea capta, which means Judea has been captured. It's captive now, that's it, it's finished. See. So, thanking God, I mean, as time went on, we actually outlived the Roman Empire. But the point is that the menorah that they had, you know, in the, on the Arch of Titus in Rome, you can still go, if you're in Rome, and go and take a look and see what it looked like. And that's the thing, you know, that is sort of reproduced in the state of Israel, okay? So, maybe that was the way it looked. As I say, I don't know for sure whether this was the way it actually looked or it didn't look, because of this machloikas, you know, the difference of opinion between that representation as compared to how the Rambam looked upon it. Okay. At any rate, what we have established so far, according to the previous Mishnah, is that we don't make something which serves as the Ribbono Shel Olam's servants, okay? And so far we've spoken about things which are the servants of the Ribbono Shel Olam that anybody can reproduce. In other words, you can reproduce a menorah. You can reproduce a building. You can reproduce, for example, they mentioned the exedra. In other words, the, you know, like a porch with columns, you know, which existed in the Beis Hamikdash. You can reproduce those things, you see. But now, Gemara is now going to ask the following questions, okay? That's the second word from the end on the seventh line, okay? Yeah, I'm looking at the other one. Oh, it's Vashamash, Shul Kamisha, where's the... Oh, I have it here. Oh, I know what happened. I'm looking at it from here instead of from my department. I have to find out, where is my glass? Where are my glasses?
Yeah,
on my... Okay, good. I'm happy to know they're on my head. Okay. So now, the Gemara says as follows. Okay, it says, V'shamoshim, she'i efshar la'atzos k'mosan mishorim. So tell me, all right, we said things that you can reproduce are prohibited from reproduction, okay? But what about things that you cannot reproduce? Servants of the Ribbono Shel Olam that cannot be reproduced? Is that permissible to do? The Hot Tanya. Didn't we learn in the Maraisa and the Gemara and send up quotes and it says, Lo yisasun iti, you shall not make with me. And how do they interpret together how do they interpret the word iti, which means with me? It means Lo sasun kidemusham shai hamisham shim fanai bamor. So the Torah says, do not make anything in the image of those things that serve me in the skies. In other words, not to make, you know, reproductions of the sun and the moon. This is what is implied over here. So, yeah.
I thought they were referring to servants. We are the servants to the God.
We are servants, but we're not up in the sky.
Oh, but
Baba Rome means up in heaven. Up
yeah,
in the
but
sky.
I mean, yeah. The verse says those things. It's E.T. The verse
right,
does
right.
not make with me.
With me
but
right.
Doesn't say anything about being in the sky. It's a that's
yeah, but Rome, what does Baba Rome mean? Baba Rome means up in heaven.
Yeah, I know, but that's not part of this pasuk.
Yeah,
that's not part
no,
of
no, no, it's not. It's look, the pasuk says, "Soon E.T." I'll quote you exactly the pasuk.
Yeah,
you shall not make in my presence, or together with me, literally, but it means do not make in my presence Elohei Chesef, Elohei Zahav, gods of silver, gods of gold, right? You're not allowed to make them. In other words, it's a prohibition against idolatry. But now we have to think back a little bit to what was idolatry like back in the days of the Romans and the Greeks and so on and so forth? You understand? This is the question right now. And the answer is that idolatry in general was based upon the worship of natural forces, to which they made them into gods and goddesses and so on and so forth, right?
Yeah.
People have a natural instinct that they want to mate, they want to have love and so on. So lo and behold, you know, you have Cupid, you have Eros, you have Venus. You understand what I mean? Okay. Water is a natural thing, so lo and behold, they have nymphs, and then there's Poseidon, the god of the seas, and things like that, you know, that's kind of business, you know. And they made statues of them in order to worship them, you understand? And this one was a god of war, and this one was a god of peace, or whatever it may be, and things like that, and so on. So, this is what the Torah is prohibiting over there. But our sages, in their interpretation, are taking it a step further in order to make it refer, you know, don't make any representation of things that are up in the heaven. Because don't forget, they worship the sun. They worship the moon. Diana was the goddess of the moon, you understand? And the sun was represented by Apollo and things like that, you understand? So they actually worship these forces of nature, and that was the religion, which of course was something that Judaism was completely opposed to. Our concept of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is not having any form whatever, none whatever. As we say, for example, in Adon Olam, but you know, the idea is repeated again and again. What do we say in Adon Olam? Ein lo dumus haguf, ye'ein oguf, right? The Rabbeinu Shel Olam has no semblance even of a body, nor is he a body. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam is purely spiritual, and nobody can really begin to comprehend what is the nature of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. So, therefore, this is what is being prohibited over here. Now, Abaye said he didn't go a whole hog for this. He said, "Lo yosra Torah." He says, in reality, when we say that, it is prohibited to make reproductions of heavenly beings, what is prohibited is only demus arba'or ponim b'hadei hadodeh. Says that is the image of the four faces together. Now, if you remember, the first day of Shavuos, we read as the Haftorah, the first chapter in the book of Yechezkel, right? Yechezkel has a vision in which he sees the heavenly chariot, and he sees, as part of this picture of the heavenly chariot, he sees that in four different directions, right, there were four headed creatures. One of them had the partsuf, in other words, the appearance of a human being, a man, right? And another side was a lion, another one was
an eagle,
and another one was an ox, okay? You say a cow, I say an ox, okay? All right, so well, Abaye is saying, therefore, he says, don't make a reproduction of that. Don't make a reproduction of these four together. Ela miato. But if this is the case, parts of Odom luchude tishtori. He says, if that's the case, then if you make a picture of a man alone, this should be permitted. In other words, Abaye was a liberal in this respect, okay? He said, in my opinion, if you make a picture of a man, then in that particular case, that would be permitted. No. So, Gemara now challenges that, because there are other people who say, absolutely not, you cannot do that. Alama Tanya, why is it that we learned in another teaching, another Baraisa, where it says, "Kol ha-partzufos mutorin chutz mi-partzuf Adam." It says, you can draw pictures of anything except a picture of a face of man. That would be prohibited. Okay? Bye. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Fine, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Got it.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll take this.
Yeah. That is prohibited. Yeah, okay.
This room right here.
Sit
here. Right. Yeah. No, okay. So this is, of course,
yeah.
So we want you to be a good guest over here. So sit down.
Thank you for your
hospitality. Is Beverly here too, or is she going? Or is she going to the
Beverly
meeting, the special meeting?
Right, with the rabbinical.
Yeah, the Kazakh.
Right.
Okay. Well.
Yeah.
Right.
Whatever.
Okay. That's fine. Okay. So, as we say, Abaye says the picture of a human being can be made, right?
Yeah.
But this Baraisa says nothing doing. You can make pictures of anything. In other words, make a picture of a lion, gizotahe. You want to make a picture of an eagle, gizotahe. You want to make a picture of a snake, whatever. Okay. Gizotahe. You can do all of these things. But you cannot make a picture of a human being. Okay? So this is the second opinion. And obviously, the two of them are in contradiction to each other. Omer Rav Huna v'reido Avidi. So Rav Huna, the son of Avidi, mepirkei d'Abaye shemi'ali, he says, from what Abaye has been teaching, actually Mepirke in this case would mean like, you know, in Abaye's school, in Abaye's cheder over there, okay, yeah. Shtibel. In his shtibel, I heard, lo sasun iti, that the words, lo sasun iti, you shall not make with me, you should read it instead, not read it, but you should, you know, interpret it as, lo sasun osi. You shall not make a picture of me. Meaning, don't make a picture of me. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam. We cannot make a picture. How is Sal? How are you? Cannot make a picture of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. That is prohibited. Okay? Because, as we said, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is a purely spiritual being, and we cannot reproduce it. Of course, the difficulty comes in that in the Bible itself, we find, you know, references to, let's say, anatomy which correspond to human anatomy. Okay? So Rebbeinu Shel Olam may have a rosh, he may have a head, right? He may have a hand, you understand? May have a foot, or something like that, right? So, are we to take it literally that this is what the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is like, or are we to understand it the way our sages have always understood it, namely, and the general principle is, Dibra Torah Kilishon B'nei Adam, that the Torah speaks in a language that human beings can understand. When we talk about Yad Hashem, what we're referring is the Rebbeinu Shel Olam's power, in other words. Okay? And, you know, the same would apply to the other metaphors that are used concerning the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. But therefore, we are not allowed to make any representation of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. We're not allowed to do like what Michelangelo did, for example, in the Sistine Chapel, you know, where he has a picture of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam making Adam or something like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I missed that one.
No, the chapel was closed that day. It was a Jewish holiday.
Wasn't there references to like a hand coming down, like for Daniel writing on a raw wall with Daniel?
You have all kinds of references here and there. Yes.
They saw a hand, when the hand came down.
Okay.
But that wasn't the Rebbeinu Shel Olam's hand. He caught the hand. That wasn't Daniel's.
Right. It wasn't the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. It doesn't say that. I know what you're thinking. The hand that was writing
the name
in the Kehilat Farsim, right, on the wall, and that was an indication. Belshazzar didn't know what it meant, but then he called Daniel, and Daniel interpreted that this meant the imminent fall of Babylonia. Okay? So he interpreted B'nai B'nai, you've been weighed. B'nai B'nai Tekal, and you have been put in the balance and discovered that, you know, that you are too light. In other words, you don't have merit because you lived so wickedly in the Farsim, and therefore the Persians are going to come and break your kingdom and take over and so on. All right. We find lots of different references, as I said. Okay? Yad Hashem is a very common expression that we find in the right. Find it again and again, okay? But in addition, for example, you know, those of us who occasionally have an opportunity to say the Adam Zemiros. Yeah. There's a verse over there which says, for, you know, Machlefos Rosho Kivime Mechuros, for example. In other words, the locks of his head are as those of a young man, and so on. In another line it says over there, Zikno Biyomnin, when it comes to the day of judgment, he's like an elderly person sitting in judgment on us, right? The Vachrus Biyom Karov, but when the Rebbeinu Shalom is ready to fight, you know, to do battle on behalf of our people, that he's like a young hero, and so on and so forth, you see. So we have to understand that these are metaphors.
It's
so
all amorphic.
Yeah, anthropomorphic. Anthropomorphic, right. Okay. So this is how Abaye interprets it, right? But as we see, not everybody is happy with this interpretation. A lot of them are saying nothing doing. Usho shamoshim mishari, asked the Gemara, and tell me, are all the other things that serve the Rebbeinu Shalom, is it permitted, you know, to make a representation of them? The Tanya, haven't we learned lo sa'asun iti, that do not make with me, means lo sa'asun kidmus shamshai hamshamshin fonai bamurim. Don't make them in the image of my servants that serve me in heaven. Kigon, for example, Ofanim, because here we have, you know, the again, coming back to the description that we find in the opening chapter of Yechezkel, the first chapter, okay. What are the Ofanim? The answer is that they were some kind of angels that looked like wheels. Because remember, he had in the depiction, he has a picture of the chariot upon which the Rebbeinu Shalom, actually, it's behind, you know, right above it, you know, is the Kisei HaKovod, is the throne of glory and so on. But anyway, they are the wheels, so to speak, which drive the chariot. You understand? And of course, it represents the fact that God is looking everywhere. He can go this way, can go that way, because it has four sides and wheels on each side, so it can go in any direction, whatever. I don't have to tell you there are many, many different interpretations as to what it represents, okay? But this is taking it, you know, this is one interpretation of it. Okay, so those are the Ofanim. Okay, what else? Srafim. Srafim, of course, we find, in other words, these are literally fiery angels. This we find in chapter 6 of Yeshayahu. Also, it's off Torah. The one for Yisro. Mishnas Bos HaMelech Uziyahu, right? Where is HaMashem Yashiv HaKisei Rav Beniso? I saw God sitting on his throne, exalted. Shulo B'lei Metzai Hoyichol, and, you know, his robe filled the entire sanctuary. Srofim Omdim Mima'alo, right? And the seraphim was standing above him. Sheish kenofayim, liyachod, right at the head, each of them six wings, and so on and so forth, and then the korazel zevi omar, and each one called unto the other, and they said, kodosh, 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 okay? So those are the srafim, okay. Then you have the chayos hakodesh. Again, this goes back to Yechezkel, because as we said, what do they look like? They look, you know, some of the creatures look like wild creatures, right? So those are the chayos hakodesh. And then, of course, finally we have Malachei Hashores. These are the ministering angels. They, you know, they minister to the Rebbeinu Shalom in his heavenly court, or something like that. Right.
Very nice.
Yeah, right. Shalom Aleichem Malachei Hashores, what we say, right? Because it's based upon the Gemara in Shabbos, which says that when you come back from the shul Friday night, two Malachim escort you, you know, and one of them, the good angel says, I hope that next week it'll be just like this, as long as you find, you know, that the home is Shabbos, candles are lit, table is set, and so on and so forth. And of course, if there's no semblance of Shabbos in the house, then in that particular case, the evil angel says, I hope it'll be like this next week. And, you know, either one, whatever the case may be, they have to answer on that.
Right.
So that's why we say, right.
He's coming home from the racetrack or
right.
something.
Right. But anyway, that's why we say, you know, Shalom Aleichem, Malachi Ashuras, Malachi Yeyur, right. Ministering angels, minister of God on high, and so on and so on. Hi, how are you, Bob? Good. Yeah. This is the page that we're on right now. Okay?
All right.
Yeah. All right. So we are not allowed to reproduce them. We can't make pictures of what the, you know, they look like. I don't have to tell you that Goyish artists have never been bound by this. I mean, if you take a look, for example, there was a man many, many years, or maybe about two, three centuries ago, by the name of Gustav Doré. He was famous for making engravings, you know, biblical scenes. And there you find, you know, a lot of these things. But as I say, Michelangelo tried it years ago, and others as well, and so on and so on. All right. So, based upon this, we see that we're not allowed to try to make reproductions or represent, you know, what the heavenly angels and the various types are. Okay.
See, the Arpani part of home.
What?
In the prayer of Shabbos. Mar of Shabbos.
What? What? I didn't hear what you said.
Arpani. Oh, I guess you don't say that.
Who?
Ofani.
No, no, not that.
Ofani?
No, it's a Hasidic prayer. You know. Holy name, no, maybe it isn't. The, you know, the prayer, maybe this large, long prayer before.
You're talking about Gagavda?
Maybe it's in the song. It's mentions. I think. Oh, it's in the song. Shall shoot the song. That's it. Oh, he doesn't. He don't know.
Well, okay. Well, we sing Shalda Shudda song. We don't discriminate against Shalda Shudda. All right. Oh, well. Okay. All right. At any rate. All right. So getting back to the text. Okay. So far we said, okay, not allowed to reproduce things which are in the heavenly dwelling, so to speak, right? So Abaye again, he defends his point of view, and he says, Leoswa Torah, he says, you know, the Torah prohibited only Elo Shamoshim Shebabonder Ho'elyon, only those heavenly creatures that are in the highest heaven, the highest place of residence, the highest abode, if you wish, in the Lebeda Shalaita. Okay? Those are the things that we are prohibited from doing. Remember, Abaye says it's okay to, you know, to make a picture of a human being, all right? So he says, yeah, the heavenly creatures up above in heaven, those we cannot reproduce, all right? Visheva Mora Atakto Mishori. But now the question again is raised again. It says, and tell me, what is in the lower heavens? In other words, the sky that we can see. Is that permitted? V'ot Tanya, didn't we learn in a Baraisa which says, Asher b'ashamayim, you know, the Ten Commandments, remember, it says, you know, the third, the second commandment, right? Right, not to make any other gods. So, right, don't make any statue or any picture of anything. Asher b'ashamayim imal, which is in the heaven above, yalo eretz betochas, right, and which is on the earth below, v'asher b'amayim etachas la'oretz, and which is in the water even underneath the heaven. That's the text, part of the text of the second commandment. Okay, so he quotes Asher b'Shamayim. It says Asher b'Shamayim, which is in heaven. So he says the Rabbos Chamo Ulevona Kechem Mazolos. Okay, all right. So that includes not to make a reproduction of what, of the sun, or the moon, or the stars, or the constellations. Mazal, the original meaning in the Talmud, is that it's a constellation. Okay. when we say Mazel Tov to somebody, what we mean is you should have a good astrological sign. This is really the idea behind it. Of course, these things lose their original meaning as time goes on and simply becomes an expression. Okay, so that becomes good luck. But you know, the question is whether luck also, which to the ancient world was also a deity, you know, whether it's not a form of idolatry. Remember, a couple of weeks ago, I spoke about the concept of Brera. Brera in the sense that, you know, retroactively it becomes okay. As applied, for example, to gambling, okay? You buy a lottery ticket, okay. Let's say you win. In that particular case, are you violating the rule by saying, well, okay, I was destined to win? Retroactively, it was destined for me to win. Okay. Even worse than the lottery ticket, however, is the fact, you know, if you actually sit down in a poker game with somebody, okay, and you're playing for stakes, and, you know, you win a pot, okay? Naturally, if you win a pot, means other people are losing, okay? That being the case, so the question now becomes, you know, are you right in taking that other person's losses as part of your winnings, or is it considered like a form of Geneva? You understand? It's a moral question. So, this is the problem, right? So, the same thing with the word mazal. Okay, all right. So, now we'll take it over here, however.
Where's the word for shadow?
Shadow is tail.
Oh, is that the same? Is that a thing?
No, not at all. Not at all. Okay. Now, in the Ten Commandments, it's written right, mima'al. Okay? So what is mimal? Up above. So far we said that bashamayim means sun, moon, star, planets. Mimal, what does that mean? That's the rabbos. That includes also not to make a representation of malachei hashoreis, the angels in heaven, right? So, this is the question that they asked Abaye, who is the great liberal when it comes to this, correct? So now, comes up with an answer. He says, Kitanya Hahi La'ovdom. He says, well, but in the second commandment, what does it say? The prohibition is really to do what? It's a prohibition against serving them. In other words, don't worship the sun, the moon, the stars, or don't worship any angels. This is the prohibition, he says. So the Gemara comes in with a question and says, Eli Yovdom, if that's what it is, then I feel a shilshul katan, name. So he says, in that case, even a worm should not be deified by you. The tiny worm should not be deified by you, right? You shouldn't serve even a worm. I don't know why anybody would want to serve a worm, but who knows? I mean, people make pictures of it. Remember back in the days of the wilderness, right, in the Midbar, when there was a plague affecting the people of Israel, what did Moshe Rabbeinu make? Made a picture of a serpent, okay?